Chapter 8. Jude had very few Christmas memories from her childhood. Here was what she remembered. Quiet mornings in the big house on Magnolia Bluff, a fake tree decorated by professionals, a single designer stocking hanging from the mantle. Breakfast had been catered. There had been gift openings, of course, a short, silent affair with Caroline sitting perched on an expensive gilt chair, her foot tapping nervously on the hardwood, while Jude sat cross-legged on the floor. A few solemn thank yous were passed back and forth, and then the whole ordeal was done. When the last gift was revealed, her mother had practically run for the door. Once, when her father had been alive, she recalled writing a letter to Santa, but that kind of whimsy had died with him. Jude did things a little differently in her own home. Since motherhood had surprised her with its powerful pull, she'd become a holiday junkie. She decorated from corner to corner until the entire house looked like a catalog spread. But it was Christmas morning that she really looked forward to, when the family came together, their cheeks creased from sleep, to open presents. In those early morning hours, with her sleepy, grinning children settled around her, she could see the result of her efforts. Her twins would remember these times with fondness. Now, though, the boxes and papers and bows were put away, and they were at the table, eating their traditional meal, eggs Florentine with fresh fruit and homemade cinnamon rolls. Last night, in a burst of holiday cheer, snow had come to the northwest, and the view outside was a gorgeous tableau of white and blue. Jude had always loved snow days, and when they came for the holidays, it was a double bonus. Today, after brunch, the whole family was going to go ice skating down at the pond on Miller Road. It would be a good time, she thought, to have a serious talk with the kids about what had happened the other night at the party. It had taken a superhuman effort not to rail at them, but she had managed it. Still, there was some talking to be done, some ground rules for senior year to be reassigned. She was so deep in imagining how she would conduct this conversation, what she would say to them, that she hardly heard what Zack had just said. She turned to her son, who was busily buttering one of the cinnamon rolls she'd made. "What did you say?" Zack grinned. From across the glittering expanse of their formal dining table, with his blonde hair messy from sleep, he looked about 13 years old. "A promise ring." Silence fell. Even Miles frowned. His hand paused mid-reach. "Excuse me?" Mother straightened. "Excuse me, did you say a ring?"
"It's really pretty,"
Mia said, pulling a frosted bit from her cinnamon roll. She popped it into her mouth.
"Mom, are you having a stroke?"
Jude had to force herself to remain calm. Her son, her not-quite-18-year-old son, had given his girlfriend a ring for Christmas. "And what exactly are you promising, Lexi?" She felt Miles lean toward her, his fingers close around her wrist. "It means I promise to marry her someday." "Oh, look, we're out of fruit," Miles said evenly. "Here, Jude, I'll help you get some more." Before she could protest, she still felt frozen. He led her out of the dining room and into the big kitchen.
"What the—"
"Shh," he said, pulling her behind the fridge. "They'll hear you."
"No shit," she said. "I want him to hear me."
"We can't come down on him about this."
"You think it's okay for our son to give a promise ring to a girl he's been dating for 3 months?"
"Of course I don't. But it's done, Jude. A fait accompli."
She pushed his arm away.
"Great parenting, Miles. Do nothing. What if we'd found out he was doing heroin?"
"It's not heroin, Jude," he said tiredly.
"No, it's love. Or so he thinks."
"It is love, Judith. You can tell that by looking at the kid."
"Oh, for God's sake,"
I'm not going to have this debate with you. If you want to throw yourself on the sword, go ahead. But don't expect me to suture you up when you start bleeding.
But
don't make a mountain out of a molehill. He was in a jewelry store, shopping for a present for his girlfriend, and he got swept away by romance. That's all. It happens to men, too, unevolved as we are.
He pulled her toward him.
Sadly, our son is an idiot. They should have told us this when he was born. That way we could have lowered our expectations.
Don't you dare make me smile. I'm pissed at him.
It's Christmas, he said. Our last one with them living at home.
Low blow.
She let him put his arms around her. Let's not ruin this, okay?
Jojo the idiot boy promises to marry a girl someday. And I'm the one who is endangering Christmas.
They're not going to school together, Jude. Stop worrying. This is nothing, I promise you.
Fine, she finally said. I will keep my opinion to myself.
Yeah, he said, smiling indulgently. And you're so good at that.
Jude sighed. I'll try. But I'll tell you this, Miles. They better go to separate schools. Moving with an uncustomary stiffness, Jude went back into the great room and returned to her place at the end of the table. Miles held out her chair for her and squeezed her shoulder as she sat down. The mood had changed. There was no mistaking the sudden quiet. Mia and Zack were both looking at her with the wariness of the guilty. She managed a tight smile and said, "Don't you just love it when it snows for Christmas?" Someone answered. Honestly, she barely knew who it was. Perhaps her mother saying something about the weather. Jude's hands were trembling just a little, and if she were a woman who had to worry about her blood pressure, she would have worried now. She understood suddenly why so many of her friends had warned her about the stresses of senior year. It was only December, and already their lives felt out of kilter, as if the warm water, which had always buoyed them up, had abruptly begun to drain away. There was danger in shallow water. Unseen shoals, like love and parties and children who lied to you. I need to return that pink sweater, Mia said at one point. It's way too big. I want to get something to wear to Timmy's party on Saturday. You want to come to the mall with me, Mom?
Jude looked up. Timmy's party?
It's on Saturday, remember? Mia said.
You two are not going to a party on Saturday, Jude said, stunned that they would even think to ask.
Zack looked up sharply.
You said we could go.
That was before you called me, drunk, at 1:20 to come pick you up.
You said we should call you, Zack said. I knew we'd get into trouble for it.
You let them go to a party, her mother said. Her carefully arched eyebrows raised. With alcohol?
Jude drew a deep breath and exhaled it to stay calm. The last thing she needed now was parenting advice from a woman who'd treated motherhood as if it were radioactive waste, something you didn't want to get close to. You did the right thing by calling. I'm glad you did. But you also got drunk, and that's the wrong thing. We've talked about this. We learned our lesson, Zack said. We won't drink again, but no buts. This is the last week of winter break, and I want to spend it as a family. We're going to Molly and Tim's tomorrow, and your grandmother's gallery is having a special show on Monday night. Ty and Lexi are welcome to come over as much as you want them to, but no party on Saturday. Zack started to come out of his chair. Miles put a hand on his son's shoulder. Guided him back down.
I knew it,
Zack muttered, slumping into his seat, scowling. Jude tried to find a smile again and couldn't. Maybe God designed senior year so that mothers like her could let their children leave home. If this kept up, it would be easier than she'd thought.
In January, on the last day of winter break, precipitation began as an icy, misting rain, but quickly transformed into lacy white flakes that frosted fence posts and telephone wires. Soon the roads were thick with new snow, and red safety cones appeared at the bottom of steep hills. Kids bundled up and went out to sled on the barricaded hills. Their moms stood by in groups, talking among themselves and taking pictures. Lexi and Zach were at her house, snuggled up together in her twin bed. On her bedside table, a scented candle burned brightly, dispelling the slightly damp-smelling air that always came to the mobile home when the windows were shut. My aunt will be home soon.
Define soon.
He kissed her so deeply that she had to push him away. She grinned at him and smacked his arm, then rolled away and got out of bed. You promised your mom you'd finish your college apps today, and she's been so pissed off lately. I don't want to make her mad again, so move it. She got dressed and headed for the door. She meant to walk right out of her bedroom and go straight to the kitchen table, where her paperwork for college was arranged in neat piles. At the last minute, she weakened and turned around. He lay in her bed, naked, her tattered blue comforter across his hips, his bare feet stuck out from the end. His smile worked its magic. She moved toward him. When she got close, he reached up and curled his warm hand around the back of her neck, pulling her down for a kiss. Just before his lips touched hers, she heard him say, "I love you so much." It took all her willpower not to crawl back in bed with him. "You're a sex maniac."
"Takes one to know one."
Something about his smile or the green of his eyes and the love she saw, something caught her then. How could she let him go away to college, just walk away from her? "Come on, I want your mom to keep liking me, and I told her I would make sure you finish the USC app today. You know she's going to check."
"What if I just missed the deadline?" he said.
"You won't. Now get your ass up. We need to finish putting everything together."
"Our last day of break and we have to do stupid shit," Zach grumbled, throwing the covers back.
He saw the way she reacted to his nakedness, and he grinned wolfishly. But before he could say anything, Lexi left the bedroom and sat down at the kitchen table. Zach slid into a seat beside her, propping his elbow on the table.
"That's a lot of paperwork."
"I keep hoping. Maybe I'll get a scholarship to the UW.
"Lex?"
She looked at him. "What?"
"I want to go wherever you go. Really."
He leaned forward and kissed her, and she thought about how it would feel to let him go, to say goodbye. It was all well and good for him to say he wanted to be with her, but that was a distant cousin to going with her. To be with Lexi, he'd have to stand up to his parents and disappoint Mia, who was more than just a sister. It would never happen, so there was no point dreaming about it. "Come on," she finally said. "I don't want to piss your mom off again. Let's finish up these applications and get going. Mia says everyone is sledding on Turner Hill." In February, Zach and Mia turned 18. The magic number convinced them that they were adults. Suddenly, they questioned every rule and restriction. Curfews struck them as irrelevant now, unnecessary. They were constantly testing the limits and wanting more freedom. And they weren't alone. By March, when tiny pink cherry blossoms floated in the air, every mother on the island complained about their kids pushing boundaries. As the weather warmed into a sunny spring, class parties sprung up like mushrooms on the roadside, blooming instantly. All it took was a phone call and a fake ID in someone's hand. "My parents are gone," became the class motto, the equivalent of a clan call. Kids arrived at empty houses or on the beach or in the woods with fifths and six-packs and baggies of pot. Some parents chose to host the parties themselves, rigorously taking car keys. But if no cool parent could be found, well, the party must go on. The whole scenario had exhausted Jude, worn her to a frazzle. She felt more like a warden than a parent, and the constant battling with her twins about safety and compromise and good choices had weakened her. She no longer believed them when they said they wouldn't drink. At first, she had clamped down, denied them, but that had only driven them to sneak out, which led to more clamping down and more angry rebellion. Every day felt like a mountain to climb, every night they spent at home a triumph. On top of all that was the college pressure. It had become a cauldron which held them all, parents and kids. The water was heating up fast. One question was asked over and over. Have you heard? It was asked mother to mother at Safeway, in line at the post office, or on the ferry. Honestly, Jude was as nervous as her kids about it. Even now, on this gorgeous March afternoon, when she should have been gardening, she was standing at the window, staring up the driveway. It was 4 o'clock. The kids had just gotten home from school. They'd torn through the kitchen like locusts and then gone upstairs.
You're wearing a groove in the floor, Miles said from the living room, where he was reading the newspaper.
He had had a surgery canceled today and came home from the hospital early. She saw a flash of white. The mail was here. She grabbed her coat and stepped into the garden clogs on the porch and headed up the gravel driveway. At the top of the hill, she pulled open the mailbox and saw what she'd been waiting for. A nice, thick envelope with the USC emblem on the upper left corner. It wasn't absolute proof, of course, the thickness of the envelope, but everyone knew it took a lot of pages to welcome a student and only one to reject. Then it struck her. One envelope. She let out a sigh and reached for the rest of the mail. And there it was, at the bottom of the stack, a second thick envelope with the same logo. Jude hurried back down the driveway. Once inside the house, she yelled out for the kids.
Did something come?
Miles asked, taking off his reading glasses. Jude tossed the heap of mail on the entry table and showed him the two special envelopes. Mail call, she said, feeling suddenly nervous. She had to say it twice, yell it, really. And then the kids came hurrying down the stairs. Jude handed Zack the envelope with his name on it. Mia snatched the other envelope, ripping it open as she walked away. Not more than 10 feet away, she spun around. They accepted me! A grin burst across her face, and then faded as she looked at her brother. Zack? She said, nervously. Please, Jude prayed. Let it be both of them. Zack opened the envelope and read the letter.
They accepted me.
Jude's shriek could have shattered glass. She launched herself forward to sweep Zack and Mia into a family hug. I'm so proud of you guys. She waited for Zack to hug her back, but he was too stunned to move. Finally, she stepped back, beaming at them. Both of you at USC. It's your dream come true. We have to call Lexi and Ty, Mia said. She grabbed Zack's hand and pulled him toward the stairs.
And the crowd goes wild. Come on, Mama Bear, Miles said, coming to stand beside her. I'll pour us champagne.
Jude stared up the empty stairs. Why are we the only ones celebrating?
We're not. They're upstairs calling all their friends with the good news.
That blows, she said, looping her arms around his waist and looking up at him.
Indeed, most of parenthood does. But we can still celebrate.
He kissed her lightly on the lips.
You did it, Jude. Maybe now you can relax.
After last period, Lexi went to the counselor's office. It was a small, narrow room lined on all sides with bookshelves. In those shelves, there were literally thousands of college manuals. She sat in a blue plastic chair, waiting. At just past 3:30, the receptionist looked up from her desk.
Lexi, Mrs. Morford can see you now.
Lexi nodded and slung her heavy backpack over her shoulder. She walked down the narrow, college poster-lined hallway and stepped into the office in the back. Through the window, she could see the gym and a pair of skinny kids, probably freshmen, playing hacky-sack. Lexi sat down opposite the large brown desk that dominated the room. Her counselor, Mrs. Morford, sat behind it.
Hello, Lexi.
Hey, Miss Morford. Lexi reached into her backpack and pulled out two thick envelopes. Inside were acceptances from the UW and Western Washington. She handed them to her counselor, who read the letters and then set them down.
Congratulations, Lexi. Now, what can I do for you?
They both offered me scholarships, $2,000, but look at the costs. The UW tuition is $5,300, room and board is $6,200, and books are another $1,000. That's more than $13,000. How can I get more help?
We talked about this when your grades dropped last semester, Lexi. The UW and WWU are extremely competitive schools. There are several island scholarships you can apply for, though, and you could always take out a loan. They have some really good educational programs.
I'd have to borrow $10,000 a year, and even then I'd have to work all through school. I'd be in debt when I graduated.
A lot of people go through college on loans, Lexi. It's a way of betting on your own future.
I guess community college isn't so bad. I can save up and go to the UW in 2 years.
Mrs. Morford nodded.
It's a great way to save money. 2 years will go by fast. In no time, you'll be back with your friends.
Not the ones who mattered. Lexi thanked the counselor and walked down to her bus stop. All the way home, she worked and reworked the numbers, trying to magically refashion it all into a plan she could make work. But there was no making it work. Short of borrowing a ton of money, she was not going to a 4-year school. By the time she was home, she was thoroughly depressed. Never had she felt as much of an outsider on Pine Island as she did now. She would have given almost anything for the choices most island kids took for granted. At home, she went straight into her room and flopped onto the bed. The phone rang. She answered. Hello? Lexi, Zach and I got into USC, both of us, and Tyler got into UCLA. Isn't that awesome? Can you come out to dinner with us tonight? We're celebrating.
Lexi banged her head against the headboard. She should just drown herself. Tears stung her eyes. She wasn't one to feel sorry for herself, but why couldn't life go her way just once? She mumbled some excuse and hung up on Mia.
A knock at her bedroom door surprised her. Come in, she said, sitting up in bed.
Eva walked into the small, cramped room. The walls were covered with photographs. There were pictures of Zach playing football, of Mia water skiing, of the three of them at the homecoming dance.
These walls are paper thin. I heard you crying.
Lexi wiped her eyes.
I'm sorry.
Eva sat down on the side of the bed.
You want to tell me what's wrong?
Lexi knew she looked awful. Her eyes were puffy and red from crying.
Zach and Mia got into USC.
You didn't want them to get in?
No.
Just saying it made her feel miserable and small.
I'm afraid that when he leaves...
You know, I met my Oscar when I was 16 and he was 28. Ooh-wee, was it a mess, I can tell you. A 16-year-old girl isn't supposed to know what she wants, and a man that age ain't supposed to want her at all.
She sighed, smiling.
My daddy would have shot Oscar if he'd showed his face at our place. So we waited. Oscar was in the service, and he went away for a few years. We wrote letters back and forth. Then, on the day I turned 18, I married him. During Vietnam, we were apart again.
How did you make it through all that?
It isn't about being at the same school or the same town or even the same room, Lexi. It's about being together. Love is a choice you make. And I know you're young, but I'm old enough now to know that don't mean a thing. Do you believe in how you feel? That's what matters.
I want to believe in it.
Is that the same thing? You might think on that.
Eva patted her hand and stood up.
Well, if I don't head out now, I'll be late for the night shift. Do you have plans for tonight?
The Faradays want to celebrate tonight. We're all going to dinner.
Well, that isn't the most sensitive thing I've ever heard.
You okay with it?
I will be, Lexi said. When her aunt got to the door, Lexi said,
Thanks, Eva.
Eva waved a gnarled hand as if to say, humph, and left the room. Alone again, Lexi looked at the pictures and clippings on her wall. Then, with a last tired sigh, she got up, made her bed, and headed down the hall. 45 minutes later, right on time, she was sitting in the living room, waiting. She had put on her best dress and taken extra time with her hair and makeup. When she was done, no evidence of her emotional meltdown remained. Outside, a car pulled up. Headlights shone into the living room and then clicked off. She meant to get up, but she couldn't seem to move. The knock on the front door rattled the whole mobile home. Finally, she made herself rise, move, open the door.
Can you believe it? Mia said, launching herself forward to hug Lexi, who did her best to reciprocate.
Lexi dared to look over Mia's shoulder at Zack, who looked as devastated as she felt.
Congratulations, she said, woodenly.
He nodded. Lexi felt Mia take her hand, and she let her best friend lead her down the wooden steps and across the wet grass to the waiting Escalade, where the three of them got into the back seat, with Lexi in the middle, as usual.
Hey, Lexi, Miles said, looking at her in the rearview mirror. We're glad you could join us.
I'd never miss a celebration like this, she said, managing a smile. We're all celebrating, Mia said. Lexi got scholarships to the UW and WWU. It's a dream come true, right, Lexi?
A dream come true, Lexi agreed, tiredly. All the way to the restaurant, Mia and Jude talked back and forth about USC and Los Angeles and what it would be like to hang out on the beaches of Southern California. Every sentence began with some version of, we'll love. Zack held Lexi's hand, squeezing it just a little too hard. Finally, as they pulled up to the restaurant and parked, Lexi dared to look at him.
I don't want to go, he mouthed.
But he would, and they both knew it. May came to the Pacific Northwest like a favorite relative, bringing sunshine. Gone were the perennial gray skies and ceaseless rain. Overnight, it seemed, color returned to this misty landscape. All over the island, curtains that had long been ignored were thrown open, barbecues were wheeled out of their garage hideaways, and patio furniture was uncovered and scrubbed clean. It was a glorious leonine month always, a bright respite before the pale gloom of June, and this year it was particularly bold. The combination of an egg yolk sun and a surprising heat brought kids pouring into beach parks and bike paths. On Saturday, the 15th, Lexi woke early. It had been a restless night, full of bad dreams about planes that taxied down runways and rose into cloudy skies. She padded out of her bedroom and headed down the hall. Eva was waiting for her in the kitchen, wearing her old white chenille bathrobe and a pointed metallic hat. On the table in front of her were two glazed donuts on yellow paper plates. One had a twisty blue candle in it. Happy birthday, she said, blowing on a noisemaker.
Lexi almost burst into tears. In all the college drama, she'd forgotten about her 18th birthday. But Eva had remembered.
I got you 2 presents this year.
Eva cocked her head to indicate the wrapped packages on the table. Lexi couldn't help remember her birthday before Eva. Long, unhappy days spent waiting alone for a mother who never showed. She kissed her aunt's wrinkled, velvety cheek, and then took a seat at the table.
Open it, Eva said, taking a seat across from Lexi.
Lexi enthusiastically started unwrapping the paper. Inside the box lay a sapphire blue cotton sweater with tiny silver buttons. She held it up, admiring it. It's beautiful.
If it don't fit, we can exchange it at the store.
Lexi would never return it, even if it were 2 sizes too small. It would always be in her top drawer, alongside the pink bedazzled butterfly sweatshirt she'd outgrown. It's perfect, Eva. Thank you. Eva nodded.
Open that one.
The other gift was about the size of a tablet of paper and slim. Lexi opened it carefully and lifted the lid. On the top was a 4-color brochure for an apartment complex in Pompano Beach, Florida. Fun in the sun, it promised in big, bold type. Below it was a class catalog from Broward Community College.
That's Barbara's apartment building, Eva said, leaning forward. I got to thinking about your future, and I thought, hell's bells, why couldn't you come to Florida with me? Barbara's got 2 bedrooms, and her and I have shared a bedroom before. You could have your own room and go to classes during the day. You wouldn't have to pay any rent at all.
Lexi looked across the table at this woman who had done so much for her, and her throat tightened. It looks great.
I should have known you wouldn't want beauty school. Barbara told me as much. You're the first one of us ever to go to college.
College? Eva said the word reverently. We're so proud of you.
And you need to get to know your other aunt. Her kids and grandkids are dying to meet you.
She patted Lexi's hand.
I know you got your boy to think about, but he's going off somewhere with his sister, so I wanted you to know you had me to think about, too. You aren't alone anymore, Alexa. Not unless you want to be. Now, let's eat these donuts. I got to be at work soon. Make a wish and blow out your candle.
A wish? Lexi stared into the small flame dancing above a twisted yellow candle. There was only one wish, and it wouldn't come true. But she made it anyway.
Good luck, Lexi. I hope your birthday wish comes true.
After that, they ate their donuts, toasted her birthday again with glasses of milk, and went their separate ways. Eva to a Saturday shift at Walmart, Lexi to the ice cream shop. For the rest of the day, Lexi was in constant motion. On a sunny weekend like this, the shop was crazy busy. She didn't slow down again until nightfall, when Zach and Mia picked her up from work. Lexi did her best to be cheerful around both of them. She laughed and joked and talked at the dinner table. But when Jude brought out a cake with candles, her fragile veneer cracked a little, and it took willpower not to cry or run away. Next year, she would celebrate her birthday by herself. Mia and Zach would be in sunny Southern California, living the college dream. She wanted to be happy for them, she really did. But she kept glimpsing the future that lay like a storm cloud on the horizon. Oh, they talked about staying in touch and keeping their lives braided together, and their intentions would be as true as their emotions. But it wouldn't be enough. When she told them about Eva's Florida offer, they both groaned aloud and begged her not to go so far away. They wanted to see her on school breaks. Easy for them to ask. But she wanted that, too.
What's it gonna be like?
Mia asked that night as the 3 of them lay together on blankets on the beach. It was the first time one of them had dared to ask the question aloud. They were holding hands, staring up at the stars. I've been dreaming about it for so long, Mia said. But now that it's getting close, I'm scared. Lexi heard Zack sigh beside her. Because she loved him, she knew what that sound meant. He was stuck in the middle. He loved Lexi, she knew that, believed with every part of her soul. But he and Mia were more than connected. They were twins, with all that the word implied. They could read each other's thoughts. And really, one of the things Lexi loved most about Zack was how much he cared about the people he loved. He hated hurting anyone, Mia most of all. That was why he was going to USC. No matter how much he loved Lexi, he loved Mia and his parents even more. He couldn't disappoint them, and he worried that Mia was too shy to make it at USC on her own.
We'll still be friends forever, Lexi said. She wanted it to be true, needed it to be.
Beside her, she heard Mia draw in a breath and quietly start to cry.
Don't cry, Zack said.
Sadness rose up in Lexi, and before she knew it, she was crying too.
We're dorks, she said,
wiping her eyes, and although it was true, and it made her smile, she still couldn't stop crying. She loved both of them, and soon they'd be gone.
I'm gonna miss you, Lexi, Mia said.
She rolled over and hugged Lexi, and then rolled over onto her back again. Overhead, the night sky loomed, as incomprehensible as their futures. Beneath it, Lexi knew how small they were. Zack pulled his hand out of Lexi's grasp and said,
I'll be right back.
Then he got up and hurried back to the house.
You'll call me Tuns, right?
Lexi asked. Mia squeezed her hand.
We'll be like Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox, BFFs forever.
Sam and Frodo, Harry and Hermione.
Lexi and Mia, Mia said. Just think, someday we'll be old together and we'll laugh about how scared we were to go off to college.
'Cause we'll still be friends.
Exactly.
Lexi fell silent. She'd learned a long time ago that there were things she might want but would never have, and it hurt less if she tried not to want what was unattainable. Was this friendship like that? Was this just a high school friend version of first love that would diminish into a fond memory with time and distance? Zack ran back, slightly out of breath. He stood above them, a silhouette against the moonlit waves.
Get up!
What for?
Mia demanded. Lexi didn't ask why. She just got up and took his hand. She loved the way his strong, warm fingers curled around hers. He held out a Ninja Turtles thermos.
I have an idea. Move your ass, Mia, and quit asking questions.
Someone thinks he's the boss of me,
Mia said as she got to her feet and brushed the sand off her backside. Zack led them down to the big cedar tree that guarded their beach. In the moonlight, he looked pale, almost ghost-like, but there was a brightness in his green eyes that looked like tears. He held out the thermos and opened it.
We'll put something in here and bury it.
He stared at Lexi.
It'll be like our pact.
For as long as this time capsule's buried here, we'll be best friends, Mia said seriously. Going off to college won't change that. Nothing will change it.
We won't be like everyone else, Lexi said, hoping her comment didn't sound like a question. But even now, in this solemn moment, she had trouble believing. Everything came so easily to these two.
We'll never really say goodbye. Not as long as this is buried, Mia nodded.
Zack held out the open thermos. Moonlight caught a flash of the silver interior and made it glow.
Put something in here as proof.
At another time, in another place, it might have been funny, or melodramatic, or just plain silly. But not here. Not now. In this darkness that felt weighted by the future that was bearing down on them.
I love you, Lex, Zack said. College won't change that. We'll stay in love. Always.
Lexi stared at him. It felt like they were connected, drawing one breath back and forth. Mia dropped a pair of expensive gold earrings into the thermos. Zack took off the St. Christopher medal he always wore and dropped it inside. All Lexi had was the string friendship bracelet Mia had given her in 10th grade. Mia had long ago lost the one Lexi had made for her, but Lexi hadn't ever taken this one off before. She untied it slowly and dropped it in the thermos. Her memento made no sound when it landed. It bothered her, as if she were the only one of three of them that left no mark somehow. Zack screwed the lid back on.
I don't think we should ever dig it up, Mia said.
Behind her, a gust of wind came up from the waves and ruffled her hair.
Digging it up would mean, like, goodbye, and we don't want that. As long as it's here, it means we still love each other.
Lexi wanted to say just the right thing. The moment seemed magical, charged. She'd always remember it.
No goodbyes, she said, meaning it.
The look that moved between them was heavy with emotion. In their eyes, they passed around the sad truth that they would be separating soon, and that they loved each other, as well as the sweet truth, or hope, that in this coming future, some things would survive, that three teenagers could stand in the moonlight and promise to be friends forever, and keep that promise. They knelt in the sand, far above the high tide line, and at the base of the old tree, they dug deep, deep into the cold, gray sand, and buried their Ninja Turtles thermos time capsule. Lexi wanted to keep it going, to keep promising to search for a future that felt slippery, but when the capsule was buried, the sand looked undisturbed again, and the moment washed away.
Chapter 9. In early June, the garden was miraculous. This was the time of year that Jude, finally, could take a moment to sit back and enjoy the hard work she'd done. Everywhere she looked, she saw the rewards of her careful planning and judicious pruning. The beds were a riot of glorious color, with sugary pink saucer-sized roses, ruffled yellow peonies, spiked purple delphinium. The deep green English boxwood she'd taken such time with was well on its way to becoming the bones of the garden. Above it all, a lotus tree was in full golden bloom. It looked like a Monet painting, just slightly off focus, against the vibrant blue sky behind it. She could see how it was all coming together, growing in. Soon, maybe even next year, she would be ready to reveal her pride and joy to the garden tour attendees. She peeled off her dirty gloves and got to her feet. The heady scent of roses captured her, made her stand there a moment longer than she'd intended. There was such peace for her here. Every plant, every flower, every shrub was placed according to her plan. If she didn't like the way something grew or spread or bloomed, she yanked it out and replaced it. She was the Red Queen of this realm, in complete control, and as such, she was never disappointed. But there was more to her current sense of well-being than that. She hadn't realized until the twins got accepted to USC how tense she'd been throughout senior year, how stressed out. She'd worried endlessly about the kids and for them. She'd worried that one or the other would miss a deadline or make an irreparable mistake, or that they wouldn't have the chance to go to college together. Now, she could sleep again, and most amazingly, she was actually excited for them to leave home.
Oh, she was still anxious about them, still concerned about the emptiness of her nest. But spring had lightened more than a gloomy sky. It had lightened her way. She could glimpse a new future for herself, a time when she could be the captain of her own journey. If she wanted to go back to school for landscape architecture, she could. If she wanted to open a garden accessories store, she could. And if she wanted to simply sit on a lawn chair for the whole summer, reading the classics she'd missed, she could do that, too. Hell, she could spend a summer reading comic books if she wanted to. The thought was liberating and a little scary. She glanced down at her watch. It was nearing 3 o'clock, which meant that the kids would be home from school any minute. If the pattern from the past month held, they'd come home in a swarm of seniors, all of whom seemed to be on a mild form of crack. That was what pseudo-adulthood and impending graduation had done to the kids. They'd become amped up, super-emotional versions of themselves. The boys laughed too hard sometimes. Girls became maudlin at the drop of a hat, burst into tears over a bad hair day. It was no wonder that emotion ran so high in these first golden days of summer. In the words of the great Sam Cooke, change gonna come, and everyone knew it, felt its hot breath drawing near. Most of the island kids had been together since grade school, and their friendships ran deep. They were torn now, wanting both to stay here, where life was safe and known, and to fly far, far away, testing the wings they'd just recently grown. Each passing day, each hour, brought the end of high school that much closer. They felt the need to make lasting memories together. That was what mattered most to them, getting together. It was the same thing that scared the parents. Parties were rampant. To combat the whole party obsession, Jude had taken her cue from the plain old garden spider. She created an attractive web. She'd had Miles haul out the jet skis and the ski boat and ready them for use. She made endless trays of food for ravenous boys and set out bowls of chocolate-covered dried cherries for the girls. She made it easy for her kids' friends to spend the day and night here under her watchful eyes. For the most part, it had worked. Too, she had learned to trust her kids. Sure, they snuck a few beers at parties, but they kept their word. Someone always stayed sober to drive, and they had never missed a curfew. She put her gardening supplies away, everything in its place, and paused in her greenhouse. There was the petunia Lexi had given her the night of the dance. It looked leggy and forlorn. She made a mental note to plant it, and then went back into the house. There she showered and dressed in a pair of low-rise black pants and a fitted white t-shirt. She placed the movies she'd rented on the kitchen counter. Along came Polly, Starship Troopers 2, and Return of the King. She was just about to go to the garage for a Coke when the front door banged open. Footsteps thundered across the wood floors of the great room and thudded up the stairs. What the hell? Jude put down her dish rag and walked out of the kitchen. The front door stood wide open. Jude closed the door and then went up the stairs. Zack's door was open. Mia's was closed. She paused outside her daughter's room, heard the unmistakable sound of crying, sobbing. Mia? She said. At the silence that followed, she opened the door. Her daughter lay sprawled face down on her bed, crying into the stuffed pink puppy that had been her favorite childhood toy. Jude went to the bed. "Hey, Poppet," she said quietly, using the nickname that had been lost along the way, tucked somewhere safe alongside baby teeth and patent leather shoes. Mia made a howling sound and cried harder. Jude stroked her daughter's silky blonde hair. "It's okay, baby," was all she said, over and over. Finally, after what felt like forever, Mia rolled over and looked up at Jude through puffy, bloodshot eyes. Her face was damp with tears, and her mouth trembled unevenly.
He broke with me, she said, bursting into sobs.
Jude climbed up into the big bed beside Mia, who curled up against Jude's side like the potato bugs they used to hunt for. Her bright, beautiful, almost grown daughter looked like a little kid again, curled up, crying, holding Daisy doggy as if it was a talisman, and maybe it was. The mementos of one's past had serious magic. Mia looked up, tears streaking down her face.
In class, she added,
as if it somehow doubled his crime. Jude remembered this pain. Every woman had felt some version of it. The end of first love. It was when you learned, for good and always, that love could be impermanent. I know how much it hurts, Jude said. My first love, Keith, broke up with me the week before senior prom. The week before. He took Karen Abner, and I sat home and watched Saturday Night Live by myself. I cried so much I'm surprised the house didn't float away. She remembered that night with clarity. Her mother had come home late, taken one look at Jude and said, "Oh, for God's sake, Judith Ann, you're a child," and kept walking. Jude looked down at her daughter's teary face. "A broken heart hurts," she paused. "And it heals." Mia sniffled loudly.
"No one else is gonna want me. I'm such a dweeb."
"Oh, Mia, you haven't even begun to find out who you really are, and believe me, other boys are going to fall in love with you. If a guy can't see how special you are, he isn't good enough for you."
"It just hurts so much."
"It won't always, though. You won't always want to puke when you see him with another girl. And then, one day, you'll see another guy who makes your heart race, and it'll just fade. Your heart will stitch itself back up, and only a tiny scar will remain behind. And someday, you'll tell your daughter how Tyler Marshall hurt you."
"I never want to see him again. How can I go to the grad party if he's there?"
"It doesn't do any good to hide out in life, Mia. That's how you used to handle things. You're stronger now." She sighed heavily.
"I know. Lexi says I shouldn't care what anyone thinks."
"She's right."
"Yeah,"
Mia said, but she sounded unconvinced. Jude held her daughter, remembering the whole of their lives in the blink of an eye. "I love you, Poppet."
"Love you too, Madre. Can we go get Lexi now? I need her tonight."
"Of course. That's what best friends are for." In less than 10 days, they would be graduating from high school. Lexi stood in a crowd of seniors, staring out at the sea of folding chairs that had been set up in the gymnasium. Principal Yates stood beneath the basketball hoop, his arms extended, telling them how the ceremony would go, but only a handful of kids were paying attention. The rest of them were laughing and talking and jostling each other.
"You'll file alphabetically out of the gym and along the bleachers and onto the football field, if it's sunny. If not, we'll be in here," the principal was saying. "Now, let's try a walkthrough, okay? Jason Adner, you start us off."
Lexi followed along as she was supposed to, finding her seat on the floor. The rehearsal took all of the sixth period, and when it was over, they were released from school. The whole class burst out of the gym like some musical where the kids were starting summer break. She and Zach found each other without really trying. It was like echolocation. Each just knew where the other was, and they couldn't stand to be apart. Everything felt so big these days, so momentous. Graduation, summer vacation, college. Sometimes all Lexi could really hold on to was now, her love for Zach, and her friendship with Mia. Everything else was changing. Zach took her by the hand and they walked across campus. At the student parking lot, he opened the Mustang door for her.
"Where's Mia?" Lexi asked.
Mom is picking her up. They're having girl time after school.
That'll be good for Mia. Lexi got in the car. Zack slid into the driver's seat and looked at her.
I need to tell you something.
What?
Not here.
Lexi tensed. Reaching over, she held onto his hand as if it were a lifeline, which it had been from the beginning. All the way through town and down to La Riviere Park, she said nothing. At the park, he pulled into their usual spot and turned off the engine. She waited for him to open his door, but instead, he twisted around in his seat. His green eyes were bright with tears.
What?
She whispered.
I love you, Lexi.
He was going to break up with her. She should have expected this, been ready for it. She wanted to say, I know you do, but she couldn't do it. The words felt like broken glass in her mouth.
I want to go to Seattle Central with you. We could get an apartment.
Wait, what? You want to go to community college with me?
I don't want to leave you, Lex.
She actually shuddered with relief, made a little sound. He kissed her damp cheek and wiped his eyes, looking embarrassed by tears that were more valuable to her than diamonds. Holding hands, they left the car and walked out to their place among the driftwood and sat down together. Waves whooshed along the sand, sounding like first love to Lexi. When she looked at him, she almost started to cry again. He began to spin the dream for her. He talked about their life and the apartment they would find and the jobs they would get. He meant it, all of it, and she loved him all the more for it. But wanting it wouldn't be enough. Mia was all she had to say. She hated to remind him, but what kind of friend would she be if she didn't? She loved Mia as much as she loved Zack. Zack sighed.
What do I do?
He stared past her, out at the sound. Then he said it again, more softly.
What do I do?
I don't think we should even talk about this, Zack. What's the point?
But it could work. Why couldn't it? We could get an apartment in Seattle, the three of us. We could go to Seattle Central for a year or two, and then transfer to the U. I'll still get in a good med school. It's not like USC is the only good school in the world.
She felt like a kid hanging onto a balloon, being pulled effortlessly into the air. His vision was so buoyant. For a few precious moments, she let herself believe in all of it. Then he said,
I'm going to tell them what I want.
And she lost her hold on the string and fell back to earth.
Not yet,
she said, burrowing as tightly against him as she could. Instead of saying anything, she strained upward, kissing him until the tears in her eyes dried up. She let her hands and her mouth communicate how much she loved him. Afterward, they lay entwined, listening to the incoming tide, watching the cerulean blue sky begin ever so slightly to darken. Finally, as the day drifted toward a lavender evening, they had to leave their snow globe world, where the view was always the same and no one else could get in. Lexi held his hand all the way back to his house, afraid to let go. As they turned onto Knight Road, her tension grew, until it was a pitchfork jabs headache that wouldn't go away. She loved Zack, but he didn't know anything about disappointment. Everything had always come so easily. He didn't expect anything else. She saw it in his face, a steely determination that fit uncomfortably on his handsome features, like a boy stepping into his dad's oversized shoes and pretending they fit.
You ready to do this?
He asked, coming around to her side of the car.
No.
He gave her a confident smile.
It'll be cool. You'll see. Come on.
She let him take her hand and lead her into the house. Miles and Jude lay entangled on the sofa, each reading a book. Mia lay stretched out on the sectional's other end, watching TV. In a pink terry cloth hoodie,
baggy gray sweats and rhinestoned flip-flops, she looked like a little girl playing dress-up.